You're listening to the Pilon Bros podcast, produced by Nolet Productions.
Okay, guys, welcome to the Pilon Bros podcast. We're here with Ron Roth, the video director at Northwood University. Is that your title?
Oh, it's a weird title. But yeah, video producer, I like to stick with.
Okay, video producer.
It's what I do, just video producer from start to finish.
And then we're here with Nick, too.
What's up?
Of course. And yeah, we're going to talk about just how we know Ron and what we've accomplished with him, some of the adventures and interesting things, and maybe talk about just technology as far as videography goes and what we're excited about and just some nerdy stuff, I guess, probably.
Really detailed video nerdiness.
Yeah. Let's start out with, so Ron, where are you from? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, so I grew up in the UP, which is the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and way up there, all the way almost to the Thumb region, which is Calumet, which is a tiny little town up there. And it's where Michigan Tech University is, and it's pretty much where what supports the entire area up there. And that's where I went to college back. I started at Michigan Tech in electrical engineering and went for a year and discovered I just did not like it at all. So, and then I took a year off of college and just worked and kind of figured out what I was going to do. And then I went back to Northern Michigan University, which is in Marquette. Well, not back to, but enrolled into that in video production because it sounded fascinating. And I did some of it in high school too. That's when video cameras first came out. It was on VHS. And so I played around with that a bit and then started I got my degree at Northern Michigan University and then dove into the TV world of being a news producer and then got into TV being a production manager for making commercials and did that for years and years and then got into the education end of it and started producing video for universities. And so prior to Northwood, I worked at Kettering University, which is the old GMI Institute out of Flint, Michigan. And so I did that for a few years. And I am here now, and I just last week had 10 years at Northwood. And so...
Congratulations. That's awesome.
So I added it up. I started in 89 in college. So it was 30 years probably of, almost 29 years of video production experience. And to see a change from what it is now to how it was is just magical. It's so different, but so more complex than it used to be.
That's awesome. Tell us about what video was like back then. You mentioned VHS and started talking about working with television.
Yeah, the thing about back then, it was one format and that was it. There was no HD, there was no 4K, there was nothing. It was 720 by 486 and standard def, and it was the industry norm, NTSC kind of stuff, and every TV station, everything used it. So it was never an issue of what format were you going to use. It was the same format. It was 720 by 486 or 480 and some things, depending on what, there's a couple of different, there was just a couple variations, but so it was really hard to edit anything. I mean, because every camera, if a VHS cameras, they were all $1,000 and they were terrible quality. So when I was in college, I invested almost $2,000 and took out a loan to buy a VHS camera, which was a Panasonic AG450,
wow,
which was an industry standard. And that thing was, it was super VHS. But for me, there was no way to edit it. So I'd hook up different VCRs to it. And then, you'd press play and then you could do a voiceover or you could add a graphic in by if you hooked, I had a little a mixer kind of thing where you could adjust the video level slightly but it was so terrible looking.
That's crazy. It almost sounds simple at first when you first explained it, as if those times were simpler, but then it was actually harder and more complicated.
And expensive, insanely expensive. It's to edit, if you just needed a super VHS editing system that was a professional unit, you were talking like $100,000, you know, for the whole setup.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to do like character generation and stuff like that. And so it was, like I said, it was easy because the final product would always be, you know, the same format, and it would go on VHS tape, or later when I got into the more professional end of it, it became Sony Beta SP, it was called, which was most, it never really got into, it's not the real Beta that came out, you know, like Beta VHS back in the 80s, it was Beta SP, which only TV stations pretty much used. It never became, you know, mainstream. So we'd convert everything to VHS to send it off. Or, you know, if it was a different TV station, we'd send it on Beta too. And but those systems went up. I mean, they were really expensive. I remember the first one because the TV station that I worked for, they built a brand new station and they put in an editing system, which was all Beta SP. And that whole entire system was close to $500,000.
Wow.
Just for one editing system. And so now when you can do it on your phone, the 10 times, 100 times better, you know, than what you could do with back then with a $500,000 system. It's come that far. But then now it's, you've got the whole thing of the modern technology. There's so many variables. And I think that's what draws a lot of people away from video, is because it's so technically challenging to learn the stuff. And there's so many options. And so that's where I struggle. You know, I have to learn something new every day, like when it comes to cameras, because there's a million different formats. When, I mean, literally a million different, you know, you can shoot in different frame rates and
right,
and different, you know, up to 60 frames per second. And there's cameras that shoot up to, you know, 30,000 frames per second. And so it's like you start, you know, getting into many, many different variables of how video works. And so it's kind of, yeah, you have to keep up on it.
Yeah.
It's and I can see that a challenging as for a new person getting into video, because they're like, I can edit video, you know, on my phone. And but then again, when you start getting into the current, the editing software nowadays is pretty much, I mean, there's only a few out there that are the standard industry standards, but it's a challenge to learn. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I find out too is when I use this modern software, I use techniques that was from 30 years ago, you know, that I'm still using that a lot of the new generation don't know about. And that's where the challenges come in, because they're all like just taking their video and putting it into the computer and just hoping they're going to get results. And they're not realizing that their frame rates aren't matching or their dimensions in their video aren't matching. And of course, that's going to cause problems. So yeah, it's come a long way. It's come, like I said, it's gotten easier and cheaper to edit, where anybody can do it with a phone or you get a camera and a computer and you're all set. But it's also become a lot more complicated, I feel.
It's kind of funny because I recently saw this post on Facebook. This guy, he's like, you know, basically talking about how video production companies are dying because of this new breed of videographers who are just being spat out with, you know, you can easily get a 4K camera, shoot point and shoot camera, and start just making videos. And what he was talking, he started going into detail with how that these guys, just single videographers are going out and doing stuff for free. They're going in and trying to build up their portfolio. Their mentality is build up my portfolio, and then eventually I'll just magically get these bigger accounts, mm-hmm. and people will just, you know, hire me for these bigger couple thousand dollar projects. And he was kind of promoting his book or something like that. That talks about how video production companies have to now they can't just sell video. That's something that he pointed out. You can't just sell video anymore.
Yeah.
And also high quality, saying that you produce high quality content or high quality video is not a selling point anymore either,
mm-hmm.
which is so true. I thought, oh, okay, there's a lot of truths in here. I mean, he's obviously trying to sell his book and everything and everything like that. But I mean, there was a lot of like kind of eye-opening statements in that post that I thought were kind of powerful as far as just how the mentality of filmmaking and videography is today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the thing too, is like there's some kids out there that I've noticed. I mean, you know, like I'm talking kids, 9, 10 years old. They're wizards at After Effects, you know, which is mm-hmm. and they can produce amazing stuff, or Premiere, and they've, you know, again, they'll go out and rent a camera, and I've seen some stuff that blows even stuff that I do out of the water, because they're truly artistic geniuses, you know. Mm-hmm. And so you see that part, but then again, when you look at them sometimes, then there's the, always that amateur end of it, because they're so young and they don't understand the whole scope of right. So when it comes to being a whole, like, okay, now how are you going to market, or how are you going to, you know, or correctly light it, or stuff like that, you'll see a lot of that. But they can do amazing, you know, special effects. But a lot of the times where I feel like I'm still in the game is because I have so, well, you know, the years of experience and just the know-how of the whole scene of shooting and editing and lighting, and especially the big one is clients, and how to handle clients and how to handle customers, or in the workplace, because I work for a university, is how to handle your the entire structure of working, where you get some of these people where they dive into it so hard, where it just, they become overwhelmed, because then they expect way too much from you. And so,
yeah, you know, and for our listeners who don't know much about Adobe or Premiere, when we're saying things like Premiere,
that's true,
or After Effects, just to quickly explain that Adobe is a, you know, professional software for graphic design and any creatives. They have several apps. So we're talking about the video stuff, which includes several apps, mainly Premiere and After Effects. Premiere Pro is a video editing tool used by professionals, and even in the you know, big time feature films and movies. So that's something really interesting. And then After Effects is a motion graphic design software that we all three of us in this room use.
Yeah.
All those two main products, as well as other Adobe products, to help us produce stuff. So when we talk about that stuff, now you know that Premiere is editing, video editing, and After Effects is motion graphics. And I want to get into something you mentioned, you were kind of getting into, which is, first, what was video before? When you know, how has video changed? Like, what is, you know what I mean?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Because that's when I went to broadcasting school, you know, I got a bachelor's degree in video production. And it's like, there were rules, strict rules that they taught you, and you could not go out of those rules. You know, like when you would shoot video, the color on the camera had to be perfectly correct and within the scopes if you were shooting for broadcast TV.
Right.
Otherwise, when the TV station got it, and if it wasn't within, that's what, if you ever see, you know, you get in the professional end, there's a lot of different types of video scopes that you use to kind of adjust to see where the colors are. And so if they weren't in those parameters, they would just reject your video. And so it's funny in how, wow, you know, everything used to have to be so correct. And like, if you were like panning, or, you know, like taking the camera and moving it around, and it was jiggly, and, or if there were grainy video or anything. I mean, I had a project where I did, I did a project in college that was related to one of my classes, and so I did it on like the snow plows of Marquette, you know, of how they remove snow off the roads. And that's when, again, I was using this is going to go way back, but it was a U-matic camera, which is a 3/4 inch camera, and it's like, so it was really dark out, so I bumped my gain up, which just, you know, caused a ton of grain in the video. And the professor just looked at the footage and said, unacceptable. Like, never, he's like, no TV station would never accept it. And he goes, it's done. And he wouldn't even let me use the footage. And so that's where,
wow,
there were so many rules where the video had to be just perfect, where now there is no more of those rules. Everything goes, you know.
Why do you think that is?
Just because it's acceptable now, maybe. And also because of the technology changes, where you could have blown out video and it doesn't freak out the transmitters or, you know what I mean, stuff like that. Because back then when you were broadcasting, it needed to be on, in parameters of those levels. Otherwise, it could cause, you know, issues with the broadcast.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I can get into all that, but yeah, that would be really technical. But
well, it's just interesting seeing the progression of what is video, because it has changed. And if people aren't realizing that, you know, you have to see where it's going. I mean, now you have VR and,
yeah,
you know, 360 degree video that's really starting to get out there.
Yeah.
So, you know, the industry is moving. Also, the creatives of just people who are making creative content. Just to entertain YouTubers, whoever they are, they're just making stuff. So it's just interesting to see that, I guess.
Yeah, and it's come, like I said, the reason I think where it is now is because of the equipment. And now it's all digital, so you don't have to worry about when back in the analog days, it had to be within parameters and it had to be. And now that everything is just digital and white is white, black is black when it comes to coloring. And so you can go below the black if you want, and YouTube isn't going to freak out, or you can go above the white and make it as white as white, you know. And back in the day, you couldn't really do that because of the way the systems were and, you know, the equipment. It had to always be like a little bit, you know, your blacks couldn't be too black, otherwise it wouldn't show up.
More forgiving.
Yeah. And so now it's like open. I mean, you can have any, you don't have to, you hardly use scopes anymore, which I still do to try to, you know, get the best color. When I colorize video, I still rely on my scopes to go through. And when I mean scopes, it's the actual, you know, the waveform monitor and stuff like that, that shows the exact color range. And if your blacks are too black or if your whites are too white, because, you know, when I colorize, you want to have everything within a range to get the best detail out of the image. And so, but I think a lot of that, there's no more rules over with that either, where there used to be strict rules in colorization. And there still are with movies. Like, movies are really strict. I mean, they have to go through. I mean, if you see, you know, what's one that comes to mind, where it was shot all in yellow, or, you know, they just color corrected in yellow, so the whole movie was yellow. But you couldn't, you know, when you're watching it, it doesn't really bother you. But if you really compared it to, like, if they put a normal color scene in there, it would have just, blew out the whole movie. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou was the one I was thinking of. I think that was a Coen Brothers film, if I remember right, but with George Clooney. But that was one that's, if you watch it, it's all shot. I mean, it's all colorized and yellow. Yeah.
Just to give it the look. You don't realize it. These are things that you don't realize, especially, you know, now that my brother and I get more into video production and stuff, I find that I do have an eye where I start to, like, when I'm watching a movie, I'm not just watching the movie. Sometimes I'm paying attention to those details and, like, oh, this, the color is actually kind of blue, or it's kind of yellow, or, you know, the color. And so I invite our listeners, if you haven't done that before, maybe we just blown your minds, go and, like, when next time you watch a movie, look at the coloring and you'll notice that they have a style to it.
Every movie, there's really, I mean, if it's,
even shows,
if it doesn't, TV shows, they are so balanced. And that's what amazes me, because you see so much, like, amateur stuff coming along, you know, especially in YouTube. But yet, some of it, it doesn't matter. Like, I see some of these YouTube channels with some of these kids. And, you know, I've got two kids of my own that have both YouTube channels. And they're like, well, so-and-so, you know, she's got millions of views. And I'll watch one of her videos and go, this is produced. This is professionally produced and it's professionally colorized. And they just disagreed with me. They were like, nope, that's just out of her bedroom. I'm like, nope. And I could show them why, you know. And so that's a thing where I think a lot of people are misled, too. They see all these YouTubers and they got millions of views. But I'm like, they're out in Hollywood and they have a crew.
Yeah.
And they're actually being professionally produced. Mm-hmm. And it's like,
people, maybe when they started.
When they started.
They probably just had a camera.
But
eventually when the money started coming in, people are asking for higher quality, better stuff. And so if you're not paying attention, you won't catch that.
And I can recognize it instantly. I mean, especially because my daughter, we had battles. And I said, you know, I want you to produce what this girl, this 12-year-old girl who's got a million followers, replicate her video. And both my son and my daughter tried. And then they came back and said, you know, I think you're right, Dad. You know what I mean?
Of course.
I'm like, because they I gave them the camera. I said, here's, you got the, you know, lights. You can use all the lights, you know, whatever you need to do. Audio. And of course, I came back and said, yeah, we can see that now. Because, and so I think a lot of the, you know, younger people want to be those people. But it's also like, you got to start out. And it's, you know, that's the thing, too, is you can start out. It's just that you just got to do it. And, you know, and if you really want to become a YouTube star, you can, there's many different ways. Yeah. But just, again, is learning the craft of video and understanding how many formats are out there. Because I feel it's misleading out on YouTube, because there's so many people that are famous. And people are like, well, look at, they're doing this and that. And they've got, you know, a song by Taylor Swift playing in the background. And they're like, well, I want to use that song. And I'm like, they got clearance for that. Yeah. Otherwise, it would block, you know.
Or, and if they did, if they weren't, they're not doing it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of which, like, I've seen a lot, too. So, right. Yeah.
So YouTube and videos in general, of like TV shows, are still high-end productions. And a lot of people don't see that. And so I think the perception, even when I'm working in the field, is people will send me video links to another university or a TV show or some clip that was professionally produced and go, we want a video just like this. And I said, all right, that's cool. Do you have $250,000 just to do 10 seconds of it? You know, and then they'll just
and a crew. Like, and a crew.
Yeah, and a crew. That's what I mean.
Includes,
you know,
that includes wages.
A full and studio with.
And know. So a lot of the people don't realize that the stuff that they're still seeing is really high-end professional stuff.
Very
it's
true.
Just that. And that's when we get back to kids starting out versus professional production companies, because those professional production companies are still needed.
Yeah. I 100% agree. I mean, I'm a little biased because we have our own production company.
But then
company.
That's the thing, too. It's like, that's where, how are you, I always urge people, I'm like, they go, well, where do I start? I'm like, use your phone. Just, and don't, like, even with me and my YouTube channels, I just put stuff out. I don't really think anymore, you know? I don't, because that's the fun part is just doing it and learning it. If you think about it too much, it's like, you're not going to get any videos produced. So just actually go out and produce them.
That's so true.
Something I want to point out too, like back to the adding, you know, gain that film look. I get a lot of people will ask, like, how do you get that look? How do you get that film look? Or how do you, you know, why do they do it this way? One show I want to point out is The Walking Dead.
I was going to say that
So they actually do a lot of practical effects, which is pretty awesome. But occasionally they have to mix between the two. And a great way to mask all that is to add film grain and and those kind of filters but Walking Dead has, like, what I learned too with that is the film grain is real. It's not post-production. They actually are using older cameras to get that effect, which I thought was really cool, because I watched like a piece where they talked about it, and I think, like, for some people they'd be like, okay, that's weird, like, why would you use an older camera? But that's in order to achieve that look.
Yeah.
Right.
You can't really replicate it in post. It's really difficult. And again, I just did a video of this, you know, I just wrapped it up for a music video that was shot 20 years ago from a band in London. And so I edited the video together, and it was all shot on, you know, 8mm film. And so I downloaded a little app on my phone, 8mm app, and then tried to replicate some of the shots that he did, and to see if I could make a music video combining both clips. And it's seriously, it just doesn't, no matter what you do, you still can't match the original stuff he shot 20 years ago on a film camera. I mean, you could try.
The sharpness.
Yeah, the sharpness of the iPhone.
It's hard to get rid of that.
And then if you blur it, then you get a blur. And
then
so
it looks like a dream scene.
That's why so many people still go back to the film cameras, and if they want to shoot it like The Walking Dead.
Camera choice is so important.
Yeah.
If you're going into, like, more serious films, if you're working with clients and things like that, knowing what cameras are going to work for different situations, that has been, I think that was our first challenge. And actually, so I want to go into, like, Nick and I working for Ron at Northwood University. I think Nick and I learned a lot of that kind of stuff. The process, because that's the other thing that we have over the individual filmmaker is we know we have the full scale production process with a team and with having a creative team putting together each process. That's post-production, production, mm-hmm. or sorry, pre-production, production, and post-production process. And then also, you know, how to get that video out there is another piece that, you know, you can give a client a video, especially if it's a small business, and they're like, okay, this is a cool video, but I don't know how to get it out on mm-hmm. social media. I don't know, you know, maybe you need to give them some different formats for you know, Instagram or whatever they, whatever their social media outputs are, or for websites. So there's a lot going on there, but I think a lot of that process is something that I learned working for Ron, because I was like the individual video guy mm-hmm. that was just going out doing free stuff. Mm-hmm. And when I worked under Ron, I started going, you know, maybe I can actually really make money doing this with my brother. And this is some like our passion. And I think we learned a lot of that process and different having different cameras on hand for different situations.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
and learning them. Learning
how to use them. Yeah, that's the thing. It's all about learning. Like I said, anybody has an iPhone. You have the capability of producing an entire motion picture on your iPhone, but it's the whole full-rounded capability of what it is from start to finish. And exactly. That's where I see is the huge obstacle. And even for me, I get a lot of people going, well, you know, if I get approached on a personal project, my price is pretty high. And then they go, well, I'm just going to have this, you know, this kid do it for $100. I'm like, yeah, go for it, you know? And it's like, just because I know he is not going to have the experience that, you know, and then of course, then they get the product and go, oh my gosh, you know, and they said, that's not what we wanted. And I always compare it like kind of like a surgeon, you know, a surgeon, all he needs is a scalpel and a microscope. And, you know, I'm like, so why don't you just take a, you know, a 19-year-old kid and have him do open heart surgery, you know? And so that's the thing with video is like, I think it's, a lot of people don't know what goes into it. And so they just think that anybody can do it because they have an iPhone. And I'm like, well, anybody can get a scalpel. That's a scalpel. And anybody, you know, I mean,
you can make a cut.
And you can make a cut and perform what surgery. The proper, you know, cut. How come we don't have 19-year-old surgeons just doing this? You know, instead of hiring these expensive doctors. And so that's what I kind of compare it to with video production. It's like, you learn an entire from start to finish thing where, yeah, you can go out and just shoot some stuff, but then to get the final product is where, you know, it's a huge undertaking, especially if you want to do it well, you know?
Right.
That's a great comparison. It's like, I love that. I've never thought of it like that.
Yeah. No, that's a great way to explain it. Like, what do I do now? A main artery burst. Well, I don't know, you know?
I want permission to use that when we work with clients.
Right.
That'd be awesome.
Like, video is like surgery.
Yeah, because it's like with computer problems, you know, I almost feel like it's harder because you got so many issues with computers and cameras not working. And it's like,
right.
And so you got to learn a lot of the workarounds. I mean, I kind of tell people about that, you know, like surgeon thing. It's like, what are you going to do?
There's a lot of problem solving involved too. You know, mm-hmm. right. we've been doing a few shoots, lately and they're location shoots. So, you know, it's not like a studio where you have more control over, the lighting and everything. And so when we got to each location, we had to set up, you know, we had to have time to set up our lights and kind of get everything situated. And the biggest thing is plugs, right? Do you have extension cords that are long enough? Because sometimes you're going to have to actually go 100 feet to find that outlet, depending on where you're shooting. And so there's just a lot of problem solving that you run into with lighting and sound. And, you know, when the guy's ends up mowing the lawn just outside the window, mm-hmm. and it's like, do you wait for 2 hours till that guy's done? Mm-hmm. Do you go chase him down, tell him to stop doing it? Or do you figure out a way, you know, another room or a different mic setup that works better with the situation? Because, you know, I mean, in our case, it would have been pretty easy to do a reshoot or something like that later on. But if it was a bigger production where, you know, a lot of money goes into that one shoot, you know, there's a lot more problem solving that goes on there.
A lot more at stake.
Yeah. A lot more at stake, you're right.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing a lot of people don't realize when they watch Super Bowl commercials, too. They're all just like, oh, those are such cute commercials. They're 30 seconds. Some of those are $50 million, you know, to produce. And they're just ridiculous amounts. And they're like, well, how is that? You know, it's like, yeah. Because there's, it's truly that much to produce something like that. And a lot of people don't understand it, you know, where the production costs come from.
Well, but if you and really also they're gonna, whoever is buying that video is gonna pay as much as they need to because, well, one, it's a Super Bowl spot. Yeah. So it's the media buying part too, where we're getting a spot at the Super Bowl. We're not gonna spend $100 on this production. You know, it needs to be that good because you're competing with all these other ads. And the best ad that I loved was I'm actually curious how much that campaign was with the Tide ad. It's a Tide ad. Did you hear about that?
I don't know.
Tide went and said they had the guy from Stranger Things, the uh-huh. sheriff. I forget his name.
Yeah.
The actor's name. But he goes and, you know, they're fixing a car. The guy strolls out and he's like, oh, you probably think this is a car ad or whatever. No, it's a Tide ad. And so they got everybody thinking that every commercial they saw was a Tide ad.
Uh-huh.
And it was just too late for anyone to fix that issue because it just the way that they did it made it so that people were just going, you know, people were tweeting, oh my gosh, I think the Audi ad is a Tide ad. Yeah. I think it's a Tide ad. And they're like, oh, really? What? You know, and then that just, and you know, the companies are like, no, it's not a Tide ad. It's not a Tide ad. Yeah. And it's just too late. It's like a wave just coming in and you just nothing.
That gets in the brilliant marketing.
Team. That is so, brilliant
marketing. That campaign, like that idea, that creative idea. I mean, I'm always thinking about that because, you know, I think it's a great example. Like, I think it's something to learn from for future reference and being creative.
Winding down, I want to, like, our listeners, I think, would be interested to know a little bit more about you. We talked about your profession, obviously, and passion. How do you incorporate your passion and your profession into your personal life, into who you are? Like, what are the things that you do?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is it's one of those things that's, like, I always tell people, you know, because I just turned 50, I'm 51 years old. I've been doing it for 30 years. So it's just like, I tell people sometime, what am I going to do when I grow up? You know, and they're kind of look at me weird because I really don't, you know, and I guess this is my passion. You know what I mean? It's like, I never minded going to work, or I never mind, you know, where most people, there's so many, they're like, I hate my job. And I'm like, well, then don't go, you know? So, because if I don't like something, I'll quit instantly. And so it's like, so that's kind of like where I find myself too. When I go on vacations, I go and rent like the latest camera or something and start shooting video and photos. And so it's like one of those things where you get a passion for it, I think. And they always say, do what you love, or, you know, and don't really care about the money or whatever. And I think that's kind of true in a way, because it's like, but there's other things too. I have a lot of other interests that I do too, but it's just that video has always been there. And it's just something that I have a lot of passion for, and photography now in the last few years, as I started learning that,
right,
which people think that's the same thing too, but it's completely different. And so it's been fun learning photography. And so, yeah,
I have to say, Ron, you're looking at your portfolio and your projects, which you can find on YouTube. I think it's like Ron J. Roth.
Yeah, Ron J. Roth, everything pretty much. Yeah. I matched it all up. So it's like
Instagram.
YouTube/Ron J. Roth. I've got Instagram/Ron J. Roth. I've got, Facebook is Ron J. Roth. And I mean, so it's like, that's another thing I did on purpose, is just Ron J. Roth, everything. So if you go anywhere, it's pretty much ronjroth.com, you know, it's another one. So it's just like, everything leads to that. And so a lot of people be like, how do I find him? It's just Ron J. Roth, go into something. And, you know,
yeah.
And I did that on purpose, you know, like I got when YouTube set up, I kind of made that brand because Ron Roth was taken because he's a famous priest that died years ago, but he's still like a classic, you know? So I had to think, take Ron J. Roth, you know? So, and it just, I love stuck. That.
I think that's really important, building your personal brand.
Yeah.
And I think there's always a point, you know, there's always a point in your life where you're able to take your skill and then build your brand. And you've done that through your social media, and you started to like create the Ron J. Roth brand and who you are. And it's kind of like your creative outlet, because you work for Northwestern University. That's your job. But you carry into your life.
And that's another thing too. That's continued education is just so important too. Like if I just sat in my job at Northwood and used the same cameras from, you know, when I started there, I mean, I would be so far behind. I would never even. So like every day, pretty much, I learned something new regarding camera and video production and photography. It's just how it is. And like I said, on the weekends, this past weekend, I went to Detroit and I had
amazing photos, by the way.
Yeah, Canon 5D, you know, I mean, I just carry it along with me and I just start shooting. And my kids told me something. We were driving down on Saturday and my daughter was driving and I was like, click, 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 click out of the window. And she's like, Dad, why are you doing that? You're never going to use those pictures. And I'm like, you know what? You're right. But I'm learning. You know what I mean?
That's awesome.
Because I was learning. I had my, you know, everything in manual. I had my shutter all the way up. So when I did click, as a car was doing 70 down the freeway, it would be perfect still image, you know, and every detail. And how is the autofocus working? How? And that's what I do. I do stuff like that. And they're like, why do you take so many, you know, they ask, why do you take so many pictures? And I'm like, it's just because I'm never going to use them. And I do. I delete 3/4 of them out. And then I end up with the few gems that I do when I usually put up on my website or, you know, or like the Detroit trip from Saturday. I mean, some of those pictures, I was like, my son even looked at them and he's like, those are like professional. Like,
yeah. They are.
Learning.
Ron,
it's just learning.
I'm telling you, listeners, Ron is an amazing cinematographer. An amazing photographer. He's really awesome at both. Everything he does, he applies himself. He applies his skill, and it's because he stays relevant by learning and constantly learning. You know where the industry is going and the different formats that we talked about. All the things we talked about today. That's what makes Ron J. Roth.
My brand. I mean, and doing hashtag. It, you know, and that's the thing too is I'm not thinking about renting a camera. I'm not thinking about going out and taking some pictures. If I'm going to go for a hike and get some exercise, I'll take my camera and I'll just take some shots and bring them into, or, you know, like with videos, I used to do a lot more of, but again, the videos are so much more time consuming than photography is. So,
yeah,
I mean, but yeah, it's a lot of fun. And that's the thing is like, I do stuff just, and here's the part too, that I absolutely love is, when I do stuff on my own, I never script anything out because that's kind of like my relaxation time. So I call it no think videography. You know, you go out and you literally turn the camera on and you start speaking and you just, I have no idea what my videos are going to turn out until that camera's on and I start speaking. And if you go under my YouTube channel, you'll see what I mean with some of the reviews I've done and stuff. There's no thought process whatsoever.
Check out those reviews.
That camera turns on and I just start talking. I mean, and then of course, there's some of those videos I probably shot, you know, 7 hours of footage, but it ends up being, you know, 15 minutes of footage just because some of the stuff just wasn't, you know, pertaining to the video. But it's just fun, and that's the thing. It's like I urge people if they're interested in video, it's just to get involved, and just start using your phone and trying it, and using iMovie on your iPhone. Because that's a powerful little program. And then Adobe now has a lot of apps for your iPhone or your Android or whatever. And they're really moving into the mobile market where you're going to be able to start. I mean, you can start doing timeline stuff right now within the mobile phones and then transfer it into the professional program, which is a really big step. And so that's kind of, it's fascinating.
That's because phones are getting more powerful.
They are.
And not just for video, but I mean you can play a lot of games that are available on consoles and PCs, gaming PCs. You can now play some of these games on your phone. They're optimizing them for mobile use. And because mobile gaming is getting so big. In fact, Samsung, when they released their S9, I believe, they had the director or creator of Fortnite, the game Fortnite. He came out and talked about how they're going to optimize Fortnite to be on the phone and a part, kind of a partnership with Samsung. And so, yeah, like if you can game on a phone, you can edit video and do all this stuff. So mm-hmm. I think Adobe's like, you know, getting on that train and making their professional tools available on a mobile phone. And mm-hmm. plus, like we've talked about, filming video on your phone is becoming big too. Mm-hmm. So how easy, it'd be a lot easier to just do everything on your phone, record, mm-hmm. edit, and push out. Within, you know, a couple hours, you could have a nice little simple edited mm-hmm. video.
And one side note on which I just every new person runs into is storage, and that's people come up to me, which camera should I buy? I'm like, what storage are you getting? You know, I mean, it's because video takes up gobs. If you shoot 4K or it's, you know, there's 6K, 8K now. I mean, you need terabytes upon terabytes. Yeah. And so personally at home, I have, let's see, 32 terabyte, I think, or I got 8.4. So yeah, that's 32 terabyte of storage just for my personal stuff. And it's almost full, you know? And this year alone, I opened it up this morning, my Lightroom. I took 30,000 photos since January.
Oh my goodness.
And so it's one of those things, that's just photos. And that doesn't include video. I mean, if I were to add up the video line. So it's one of those things that's like, I'm doing this, but also storage is huge. Yeah. And at Northwood, I mean, where I work, it's like I have that set up where I have a duplicate set systems. And so I just, you know, took this old system and put, what was it, eight terabyte drives in it, 64 terabyte, just for a backup, you know? And it's like, people are like, 64 terabyte. I'm like, well, that's really nothing when it comes to the stuff that, you know, I shoot. Some of my projects, if I shoot with four cameras all in 4K, they all in, you know, I'll have a afternoon and it'll be 1 terabyte of footage. Just, you know, where are you going to put that? You can't put it on a phone, you know, there. So like when I get a phone, I always get the max out, like 256 gig or whatever. I think they might get the 512 now. So it's where Samsung's always coming nice because you can get the SD cards for them. And so, yeah, that's a big deal where a lot of people don't realize in video is where are you going to put storage? Where are you going to put all the video and back it up? Mm-hmm. Well, Google Drive is another, I love Google Drive and Dropbox. Those are my go-tos. Yeah.
Drive too. Definitely a good tool, good cloud.
Yeah, because it's like I just upload stuff there. And I mean, if you don't care about what the content is, because, you know, people start getting into that whole, you know, privacy thing. But it's like, you know, just... it's one of those things, if you're concerned about privacy and you don't go on the computer because Google Drive isn't secure, Dropbox isn't secure. I don't care how much they tell you, it's just how it is.
Ron, you are a wealth of knowledge, especially when it comes to video production. I think we had like tons of information
we got to talk about it.
Some really cool stuff. To end the podcast, we love to give our listeners some sort of takeaway or an inspirational message. Is there anything that you could tell, you know, aspiring videographers or just people who want to, you know, who are like you that want to do what they love to do? What are some things that you, with your wealth of knowledge, what can you say?
I would say, I mean, if you don't have a YouTube channel, you got to have, I mean, and just do it. Produce stuff. Put it out there. I mean, make sure it's not too obscure or strange if you're trying to build your, you know, your if you want to build it to be really professional. But I'd say just start doing it. And a lot of things too is just keep, you can upload all the videos you want and just keep them private on your YouTube channel, but just get them out there. And just even not to show anybody, just to produce the stuff. And so when you're learning, you can go back and look at those videos and see how much you've progressed. So definitely get a YouTube channel and just start doing it with your phone. And, you know, there's a little upload button that never share on every phone nowadays that says share to YouTube. And that's what I would highly suggest is to put, of just going out and learning it and making videos and not thinking about the planning process too much. Yeah. You know, starting out. And then once you get better at it, then you can start doing the planning process and going, okay, now I really want this video to be this. And then you can start scripting it out and do stuff like that. So
Here's something. Something I love what you said. No think videography. Yeah. That could be a hashtag.
Yeah, like
a
challenge.
Go do hashtag no think videography. Go try it out and just do it.
Yeah, we're going to start it.
No think video or something.
No think video.
Because it's like, that's the thing, is that's where you learn. It's like, you know, I mean, that's how, again, to get back to surgery, that's how surgeons learn. They keep doing it over and over again.
Yeah, exactly. And they watch YouTube videos all the time on how to do the surgery. You know that they do.
And that's another advice, too, is just watch YouTube videos of other people trying to, you know, how to use your iPhone for video. I mean, and I do that still, you know, and there's a wealth of information. And then I must say there's some of them that are just, they don't have no idea what they're doing, but you got to kind of weed those ones out. Yeah.
But you got to try it out, try the techniques people show you and make your own techniques.
So Ron, as we sign out here, can you kind of tell everyone again where they can find your content, how they can follow you, and maybe give them a challenge to watch a certain video that you really like that you've done.
I mean, my main website is just Ron Roth or ronjroth.com. Don't go the Ron Roth one. I'm not that.
He's not a priest.
I'm not the priest guy. But anyway, just ronjroth.com, and then probably the YouTube channel is the best resource of where I do weird productions and let myself, again, a bunch of no-think videos on there, and I do put them public because I'm at a point now, I've been doing this for 30 years. I don't need to build my resume anymore. I don't care about it. You know what I mean? Yeah. And if you don't like this style of my videos, then don't hire me, you know? And it's one of those things where you get to a point where you don't have to worry about your resume anymore. And so I would just definitely say go on like YouTube/RonJRoth and check out those videos.
Yeah, he gets quite a bit of views, and
I've got a few hundred
some awesome reviews.
And
read the comments. People want to see more.
Read the comments; they're pretty entertaining.
Yeah,
it's just neat. And then you know, weekly you get a new subscriber, and you get new comments, and you know, respond to them. So it's always kind of fun seeing all that too. But
thank you for listening to the Pilone Bros podcast with Ron Roth as our guest.
All right, thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you'd like to listen to more, be sure to visit our website at nolipproductions.com/podcasts. Also, you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever else you like to listen to your favorite podcasts.